Hi, this is Alex DeBoer. For today's Vancouver COVID-19 update, we will be playing an episode of Seeking Office. I hope you enjoy. On May 25th, George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police.
A warning, disturbing video shows a white officer pinning Floyd to the ground with his knee for several minutes Monday.
On the same day, a white Canadian woman named Amy Cooper was walking her dog in New York Central Park. When a black man asked her to put her dog on a leash, Amy Cooper threatened that man with police violence.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
The confrontation, caught on video, sparked a national outcry of racism.
2 days later, on May 27th, Regis Korchinski Paquette, a woman of black and indigenous ancestry, fell 24 stories to her death in Toronto after the police were called to assist with a domestic conflict.
Her family believes police played a role in her death. The incident.
And so given that the police were responsible for protecting Regis Korchinski Paquette and everybody else in her household, they failed.
Across America, protests continue to rage over the murder of George Floyd. Here in Canada, anti-racism rallies have been held in major cities, with thousands coming out to oppose police violence and white supremacy, both in America and at home. Yet mainstream Canadian media continues to focus its attention on America and America's race problem. The reality is, police profiling and brutality towards marginalized communities, particularly Black and Indigenous communities, is not only an American issue. It's a Canadian issue, and it's a Vancouver issue. I'm Alex DeBoer. This is Seeking Office.
What really is shocking is that when you tell people about anti-black racism, most people push back. They can't picture it because they don't experience it themselves.
This is Lama Mugabo. Lama is an organizer at the Hogan's Alley Society, an organization dedicated to daylighting the presence of black history in Vancouver and throughout BC.
If you're black, you know it's there. Because if you're in a park, try to enjoy a barbecue with a group of friends, inevitably someone will call the police as if you're not supposed to be in a public space enjoying the park like everybody else. If you're walking down the street or if you're driving while black, you know, especially if you're driving a nice car, you'll be pulled over.
In 2012, black people made up 9.5% of the prison population in Canada, but were only 2.9% of the overall population. In Vancouver, in 2017, 5% of the people who were street-checked by the VPD were black, when only 1% of Vancouver's population is black. Lama says the kind of surveillance and risk he and other black people face at the hands of police goes largely unacknowledged.
A wrong movement you make can define your death sentence. And so you have to be extremely careful what you say, how you carry yourself. Different from non-blacks, especially white people. So they don't understand the threat or the trauma we live with on a daily basis.
And so you see, like, there's a very clear trajectory between over-policing in the community and who ends up in prison.
That's Meenakshi Minot. Meenakshi works at Pivot Legal Society as the criminalization and policing campaigner. She also organizes with the Vancouver Prison Justice Committee.
Yes, Indigenous people are subject to mass incarceration, as are Black folks, and this is not an American problem. I think that's what I'm really hoping. People who live in the country that is occupying Indigenous territory known as Canada. I'm really hoping that people can see that it's not an American problem. There's nothing unique about Canada except that maybe we've managed to put a more polite and bureaucratic face on the racist violence carried out here.
BC's population is less than 6% Indigenous, yet in 2018, Indigenous people made up 29% of provincial police admissions into custody. Just over 2% of Vancouver's population is Indigenous, And in 2017, over 16% of the random street checks carried out by the VPD were on Indigenous people.
The Cut the Police Budget campaign is concerned about the about 4% yearly increase to the police budget in Vancouver.
In June of 2019, the Carnegie Community Action Plan, Bandu, Hogan's Alley Society, Pivot Legal Society, and Anti-Police Power Surrey launched a Defund the VPD campaign. They encouraged people to send letters to council demanding cuts.
A number of community groups made presentations to city council calling for them to defund the VPD. And that followed a summer of town halls, of conversations around, like, what do we need? Because police are not helping.
Despite the 2019 Defund the VPD campaign, Vancouver City Council approved increases to the 2020 VPD budget as part of their overall operating budget. But now, the Defund the VPD campaign is back underway. This campaign is part of a larger North American push to defund police in the wake of George Floyd's killing and other acts of police brutality. Right now, a letter template is being passed around with three direct requests for council. Number one, to never again vote to increase the Vancouver Police Department budget. Two, to cut the existing police budget by a minimum $152 million. And three, to prioritize the expansion of community-led health and safety initiatives. Meenakshi says the last request, to expand community-led health and safety initiatives, is crucial because most of the calls police receive don't require force. Instead, she says, we should have frontline responders who know and are part of the community. Lama agrees.
We don't need more boots on the ground. And more importantly, if someone is distressed, you shouldn't really call burly armed men to come to the rescue. The result of this has been loss of life. You should send trained professionals who know how to de-escalate the situation. We need more empathy, more understanding, more care.
Lama and Meenakshi think that instead of putting money into policing, we should be directing money into things like housing and social services. They also think creating peer-led community policing programs could be a viable alternative.
We have called for defunding the police so that funds can be diverted to peer-based organizations. And again, peers, not psychologists or social workers who can also function like police, but peers who are able to, like, best attend and respond to crises in their communities.
Community policing implies that, you know, instead of driving through the community, the police officers are walking and they're playing basketball with people. They know each other. They know people on a first-name basis, more humane. They don't rush to handcuff people and arrest them, but they try to find solutions. So it's gradual. It's really bringing new knowledge to the process.
The Vancouver police budget takes up over one-fifth of the city's overall operating budget. This year, the VPD's budget is over $315 million.
This money could be used in critical areas like housing. People are homeless. The homeless rate has gone through the roof. We need to use these resources wisely. It can't continue like this.
On May 13th, Vancouver City Council passed a resolution to cut the VPD budget by 1%. Which will add up to $8.5 million. The incentive for this cut was not police brutality. It was to help make up for the city's projected $152 million shortfall, owing to COVID-related revenue losses. CITR News reached out to Mayor Kennedy Stewart to discuss this cut and the ongoing Defund the VPD campaign, but he did not reply. We were, however, able to reach Councillor Pete Fry. Okay, Councillor Fry voted with the majority of city councillors to increase the overall VPD budget for 2020.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk with me. I know you are very busy.
Councillor Fry agreed to talk with me about his response to the Defund the VPD campaign. This interview was recorded on Thursday, June 4th.
Okay, so I kind of want to get right into things. So right now we're in a moment of heightened awareness of systemic racism and police violence against Black and Indigenous people. And we all know what's happening in America. And while it's related, I don't really want to talk about it. I want to talk about Canada. So last weekend, there was a rally against police violence and racism downtown in front of the art gallery, and more than 3,500 people attended. And there's another big protest happening tomorrow. So as a city councillor in Vancouver, I'm wondering what your response is to this, and what kind of changes you're hearing your constituents ask for when it comes to racial profiling and police brutality.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting part of the role, because we have been receiving a pretty significant number of emails. There's sort of a form-generated email. It's sort of consistent with the defund the police movement that really took hold in the United States and has been kind of exploding worldwide. So I imagine a lot of the language might even be similar. Although this is very specific to the city of Vancouver, and it talks about the budget for policing, and then suggesting some redirecting those funds, and quite specifically having that budget in the next budget consideration, so reducing it by half. Now, that being said, on a fairly regular basis, I mean, this is obviously an organized campaign, mm-hmm. I would say, organically speaking, just people writing, because of course we hear a lot of complaints from the general public on a variety of things, everything from off-leash dogs to perceptions of crime and safety in communities. And I would say we've also, especially through the course of this pandemic, we've heard a lot of concerns around crime and safety in different communities.
Right. So you're saying you're both hearing calls to defund the police because of police violence and racial profiling, but also that we need more police because there's more disorder and crime.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. How do those compare? Like, is it sort of equal? The for and against, kind of?
Well, I mean, I would say the calls for policing are fairly consistent throughout my experience as a counselor, and the various kind of complaints around crime and criminality and street disorder and those kind of things are fairly consistent throughout the year. They've definitely spiked through coronavirus time, whereas this Defund the Police is really an organized campaign.
Right. And I'm wondering how your perception on the role of the VPD may have changed. Have you started to think differently about the VPD or consider the letters you've been receiving to defund them?
I think it's important to unpack, first and foremost, the absolutely horrific situation that so many of us bore witness to with the with the George Floyd video. I think that shook so many of us to our very core, including people in law enforcement. And I mean, I've talked to a few cops since that video, and it doesn't sit well with them either. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that nobody should ever see. And that's appalling. And it's a failure. That's a deep failure of the police system, in particular in the city of Minnesota. But I can categorically say that what happened in Minnesota would never happen in the city of Vancouver. There is no way that four Vancouver police officers would stand by as that went down. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you might have one bad cop or two bad cops, but that would never, I mean, so, but that doesn't minimize the impacts of systemic racism that do happen, and often at the hands of police.
Councillor Fry is the only person of color on Vancouver City Council. When I asked him if he's ever been racially profiled by the police, he said yes, more than once.
but he also said the VPD have gotten a lot better over the years and that they do a lot of good work in the city. But that doesn't change the city's projected budget shortfall of $152 million. So even if only for financial reasons, doesn't it make sense to cut the police budget right now?
Well, you know, it's not as simple as that. It's not black and white or binary. So, for instance, we, as you know, local governments and municipalities exist as a creature of the province. Mm-hmm. We, as a city of Vancouver and any local government, we're obliged by the Police Act, which is a provincial statute that sort of sets minimum standards of policing and numbers of police and those kind of things. So for us to, as this campaign is suggesting, to have the police budget wouldn't be realistic, especially considering that the police budget is close to 90% salaries. So
Councillor Fry is bringing up two important obstacles to defunding the police. The first is BC's Provincial Police Act. This provincial statute mandates that local governments have a police force of sufficient numbers to enforce the law. It's a bit arbitrary, but if a city doesn't meet this requirement, the province can step in and provide what they deem a sufficient police force. The second obstacle is police salaries, which are part of what has been negotiated by the Vancouver Police Union. Police unions are notoriously powerful in cities across North America. But these obstacles withstanding, I asked Fry if in theory he would be in favor of cutting the VPD budget and instead putting more money into social services and housing.
I would be in favor of putting those systems into place and reducing the need for police and therefore reducing the budgetary need for police, but not the other way around. So I don't think it would work to just cut the police budget and take that money and put it into new services. I think it's a more... that recalibration needs to happen more sort of thoughtfully, methodically, and gradually.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, in December of 2019, you voted against Councillor Swanson's amendment to divert money away from hiring new police officers and direct it towards addressing the city's homelessness crisis?
Yeah, well, also recognizing that, you know, when we make kind of substantial amendments on the floor of council, mm-hmm. not a great practice, you know, because, I mean, we're obliged to do, I mean, we get these reports with the understanding and expectation that our staff have done a significant amount of research and that we're just sort of validating their work. When mm-hmm. stuff comes out of left field, I don't feel confident to make a snap decision based on, you know, an amendment that's presented by a councillor on the floor of council without an opportunity to research and consider what does that mean. I mean, that's what I found out about the Police Act, was looking at, like, well, can we just do that, you know, and why do we have a separate police board? And the fact that we as a council don't really have authority over the police. The police board has more authority over the police than we do. We just signed a check.
Right. Is that your phone ringing?
It's my phone off my computer.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I will...
The last few calls I got have been people calling to defund the police, actually. So,
After talking to Councillor Fry for over an hour, I left him to get back to answering all the defund the police phone calls and emails he was getting. But I left that conversation wondering, is there an unscalable impasse in front of us? Do things like the Police Act, the Police Union, and the Vancouver Police Board make it impossible to defund the police, or at least have meaningful police reform?
My name's Kevin Walby. I'm an associate professor of criminal justice at the University of Winnipeg.
My co-reporter, Joshua Azizi, called up Professor Kevin Walby to find out.
I've done research on police budgets in Canada. I've done research on the use of SWAT teams in policing in Canada. Mm-hmm. And just generally, I use freedom of information requests to get the kind of unpublished records about policing that reveal quite a lot about what's actually happening.
We were eager to hear what someone who's done so much digging into Canadian criminal justice had to say about Councillor Fry's arguments.
My colleague interviewed actually a Vancouver City Councillor. Something that he said to us was that one of the reasons that municipalities can't defund the police very easily, or possibly even at all, is, well, what he was saying was that like BC has like their BC Provincial Police Act. And there was like an op-ed in the Globe and Mail by Alec Mukherjee that was saying something similar about how provinces have police acts that basically mandate them to have what they call an adequate and efficient amount of both police force. I can't remember the exact wording, but what are your thoughts on that? Like, do provincial police acts serve as an obstacle to defunding?
I think that that relates to what we were talking about earlier with governance issues, which is the first thing to really address. Police unions in Canada are incredibly powerful. They dictate the terms of their collective agreements to cities, and they've worked for years and years to populate the wording of those acts. They're not neutral political agents whatsoever. They've been pushing for these kinds of changes for years and years to make sure that they can extract as much money from municipal and provincial budgets as possible. So, yes, I think that's right. That is a barrier, and that is the kind of thing that would have to be opened up and addressed to really make some change on defunding police.
So Kevin agrees with Councillor Fry that the Provincial Police Act is a major barrier, and the police board, a governance body created by the Police Act, is another. Police boards propose police budgets to city councils. And Kevin says, city councils essentially give these budgets a rubber stamp with little to no scrutiny. And as we've talked about, police budgets are huge. Again, a fifth of Vancouver's operating budget goes directly to the VPD. That's because the Vancouver Police Union has secured high salaries and major protections for its members. Like, remember how Councillor Fry said 90% of the police budget is salaries? Well, these privileges enjoyed by police are fiercely protected by their union. Kevin says they're far from justified.
One criticism of the defund police kind of claim is that you can't cut anything. You need all that money. That's not actually true. There's kind of a cost overrun and slush fund mentality in policing in every major Canadian municipality that I'm aware of, where you've got things like overtime paid in a really gratuitous kind of way. It is an excessive cost. In Winnipeg, that's a $10 million expense a year. So you could start to rein those budget lines in. A couple other budget lines to look at would be when you have officers who are in retirement age and they're making actually the highest salaries, and they continue to work for 5, 10, sometimes 15 years after they're eligible for retirement, and they're drawing gigantic salaries like $140, $150, $160 a year. They could retire. In other workplaces, they'd be forced to retire, but they're drawing $150, $160 salaries, and that is really inflating the costs of policing.
Kevin says another way to cut down police budgets is to remove big line items like helicopters and armored vehicles. These purchases are extremely expensive. Kevin says historically police departments have even pitched the idea of spending more tax dollars on new technology in order to reform police culture. Things that have to do with surveillance, like body cams.
They say, okay, we'll be more accountable. We'll put on body cameras. There's another expense to taxpayers. There's another $50 million going out of the taxpayers' pocket and going into the pocket of the company that makes body cams, which is associated with a shell corporation that is responsible for tasers.
According to Kevin, body cameras do not cut down on police brutality. And likewise, we shouldn't be fooled into thinking that more sensitivity training will change anything.
They say, this won't happen anymore if we just have anti-racism or sensitivity training in policing. Police have had anti-racism and sensitivity training in Canada for at least 15 years. It's mandatory, but they still keep killing Black Canadians, Indigenous Canadians. So the training is actually part of the problem, because it does offer them some language around race and racialization, but it does not counter the other training they receive on how to use force, when to use force. It doesn't counter the tendency to want to emulate SWAT teams.
And just days ago, a 26-year-old Indigenous woman named Chantelle Moore was shot to death by police in New Brunswick. The police had been called to perform a wellness check on her. Making news on the same day was video footage of an RCMP officer purposely hitting an Indigenous Inuk man with the door of a pickup truck in Nunavut. Kevin says this kind of police brutality against racialized people happens all too frequently.
Canadians, and especially politicians, have a responsibility to look at those figures and question them and say, we can no longer do this. We can no longer give a third of our municipal budget to an agency that everyone is outraged against, that adds a lot less social value to our cities than community and social development, recreation, the arts. It needs to be a more equitable distribution of funds. So I hope that politicians in Canada will hear the messages of the last week and not just treat it as some kind of outraged rhetoric, but treat it as a real policy need and look at those mechanisms of governance that are the kind of gateways to making the change. Look at the budget lines and be responsible.
It's true, there are major barriers in the way of defunding the police. Defunding will require collaboration and hard work between the provincial and municipal governments. And then there are the police unions to contend with. But, like anything, it comes down to political will. On Sunday, a majority of Minneapolis city councillors announced they will vote to disband the city's police department and replace it with a new model of public safety instead. Although councillors aren't yet sure what that new model will be, they intend to work with their community and study past reform efforts as they put it together. This past Friday, the Vancouver chapter of Black Lives Matter issued a statement. They made some demands for the city of Vancouver, which include redirecting finances from the VPD into initiatives for community safety, improving social conditions in Vancouver with a commitment to abolishing police and prisons, and addressing the ongoing harms the destruction of Hogan's Alley has caused to Black people and other people of color in Vancouver. If you want to read the rest of their statement, you can do so on Instagram by going to the account BLM_van. If you want to donate to Black Lives Matter Vancouver, go to their website, blacklivesmattervancouver.com. If you want to donate to the Hogan's Alley Society and learn more about the work they do, go to hogansalleysociety.org. Thank you for listening. This piece was reported by me, Alex DeBoer, and Joshua Azizi, with reporting assistance from Armon Reyna. Special thanks to everyone who gave their time, including Lama Mugabo, Meenakshi Minow, Pete Fry, and Kevin Walby. The music you heard throughout the piece is all by Blue Dot Sessions. The songs include Setting Place, Florentine, We Drive 3 Days, and Svelatal. Take care.